I will call this meeting of the Children and Families Committee to order. And there is indeed a quorum present. And Representative Olson, can I get a motion on the minutes of March 5th?
Nice. The first action that I do in this committee is to make a motion to move the minutes from the last committee.
We miss your sultry voice. Any discussion on the minutes for March 5th as moved by Representative Olson? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So we will now move on to the bills, starting with Vice Chair Nelson. So Representative Nelson, if you want to move your bill as it was laid over earlier in committee, and we'll take up your author's amendment before we get started.
All right, thank you. I would move HF 1169 before the committee. And members, we'd heard this bill a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember how many it was, but it was it's labeled the Paperwork Reduction Act. But really what we're looking at doing is updating the SSIS system, the Social Services Information System. And there's been a couple of phases that this is in, and I don't know if we're in 2 point something or what exactly it would be right now, but there was a study done a couple of years ago, and last biennium there was some funding taken for it, and then now we're kind of into that next step of needing a greater amount of funding, and so the greater amount of funding is found in the A1 amendment, and that would be $40 million being appropriated to updating the information system. And about half of that, or there's also a federal match of roughly about half of that, so to update this system. So I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment, and for reference, House File 1169 is being re-referred to Ways and Means. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Chair Katiza Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Nelson, for adding on some financial appropriation to this bill. I know we've had a really comprehensive discussion about this and the many needs that our county workers and the department are working on right now. And I think, with the processing, I think one of the questions that you and I had talked about offline is just kind of whether or not we look at a one-time full investment, or if we, depending on the timeline of the department, working with Minute on the actual process of implementation, if it kind of chunks out. So I think that we can continue having that conversation. Both Chair West and I sit on Ways and Means, and we can figure out a little bit more, once we get a little bit more information from the department on what that timeline looks like, then we can make sure that we're making the investment in the appropriate stages, if that's the case.
Representative Nelson.
Yeah, thank you. And, I appreciate the conversation, or then the question. This has been a pretty comprehensive discussion around this system. And I think there is somebody from the department here today. I think it's something that we all have wondered a little bit of, what does the timeline look like? When will these expenditures go out? And so I think maybe if there's somebody from the department that would like to come up and maybe help shed a little bit more light on that. I don't know if they have an exact date that we could look for the rollout, but I think there's we can look at some, get an idea of a timeline.
Thank you for joining us, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Cynthia Shapolsky, and I am the Comprehensive Child Information System Supervisor at the Department of Human Services, so working on modernizing SSIS. In reference to timeline, what we're looking at is starting that comprehensive assessment for a full assessment of modernization, platform needs, timeline, and really moving forward strategically on that. We're looking for that to start within the next couple of weeks, and we anticipate that that will take about 6 months for it to be completed. And our hope is that we are well situated then to rapidly move forward on prioritizing items in modernization that are going to be most effective and add the most value for the frontline caseworkers. And that we'll be able to hit the ground running with that work.
Thank you, Ms. Topolsky. Is this comprehensive assessment being done by the department or is it contracted out? Ms. Topolsky.
Yeah, thank you. So we have gone through our formal RFO process to secure a third-party vendor.
Chair Katizawatu.
Thank you for that. And I am struggling to remember. I think, you know, there was conversation about and potentially allocation of some previous funding in order to start out on this RFO process. And then could you share any relevant information in terms of, like, how social workers or, like, county workers, caseworkers will be included in kind of this RFO process and making sure that the system is going to serve the needs that that we want it to do ultimately?
Ms. Topolsky.
Sure. Yeah, thank you very much for that question. I would say two things. For this assessment, part of our request and part of the requirements in completing this assessment is to do that comprehensive engagement with all of our partners, whether they are our American Indian Child Welfare Initiative tribal partners or local agency partners, and really at all levels. So we want to make sure that this is really primarily working for our caseworkers out in the field. And we also have to make sure that it's fulfilling our federal requirements and all of the data analytics requirements for all of the administrators throughout the state who that information is really vital for. Of course, we know if it doesn't work for the caseworkers, our data is going to be not as accurate as we want it. And so we will be balancing both of those things. And through this assessment, the needs of all of those partners will be included and represented and be part of how we are prioritizing where to add that value, again, first primarily for those caseworkers who really carry the burden of entry in the system.
Yep. Chair Katizawatu.
Thank you. And then just kind of specifically to after this RFO or after the assessment is complete, have we gotten any idea from, I think we're working through Minute, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. The records show that she said yes. Have they given any indication in terms of, like, how long it might take from after the assessment completes to go live?
Ms. Topolsky.
Thank you so much for that question. I think that in general, there's a few different approaches that can be taken. One is kind of unplug from one system and plug into a new system. This is, in general, an older style of doing system development work, and what we would be looking at is a more efficient and model where we're really looking at modular design and moving from an old system to a new platform in a way that is going to cause less disruption and less inefficiencies for the workers who have to use it, right? We don't want people to go from a blue screen to, AI in one day and be very confused and have a lot of unnecessary problems for the workforce. So we're really looking at a modular movement, like I said, starting with those areas where it can be most beneficial for the direct practice workers.
Chair Katizawatu.
Thank you. I think this is my last question, Mr. Chair. So that sounds like a good positive plan and experience for the people who are using this system, kind of one piece at a time. And I guess kind of then ties back to my original question of the vice chair, that $40 million up front to go from, you know, to build the entire thing, or if it would be potentially possible as we consider allocations and the budget forecast and everything, if
segments of the entire allocation might make more sense. What is the timeline of typically when we're working with a federal match? What is the typical timeline of getting the match dollars from the federal government?
Ms. Schapolsky.
That's an excellent question, and I'm, as not being the accountant with them, don't have that information. But I think in general that I would just characterize that as a pretty well-oiled machine for us. And so, you know, we have really strong relationships with our federal partners in the CWIS area, and they're aware of the work that we're doing, the work we want to do, and I'll just say excellent partners to work with to ensure that they are supporting our work to the extent that they are able to, and really focused on adding those efficiencies to our system.
Chair Katizwa-Tu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that. I mean, I think that that bodes well for the work that we're trying to do. And I think that, you know, child protection and the functioning of this system really is something that unites us and doesn't divide us. And so to the extent that there might be changes coming down the pipeline at the federal level, I hope that, you know, that the, we don't see any lack of support in some of those partnerships. So thank you for your time. That's super helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Katizwa-Tu. Those are fabulous questions. Literally, I was going to ask them. So I guess I don't have anything to add other than we were in Ways and Means where we heard Chair Torkelson specifically highlight the need for funding as SIS. So I think today is the optimal time to just be like, oh, we heard you. Here's some money in your committee. So do you have anything before we adopt the A1, Representative Nelson?
No, I don't have anything further. I guess the only thing I would add further is probably along the lines the department has asked, part of their timeline is somewhat uncertain, as you've heard. And so there's a line in their funding is available until June 30th of 2027. And I guess I would like them to speak to that a little bit of, you know, and I think it fits well with the Representative Katizwa-Tu's questioning as well. You know, when are these funds available? Because I think one of the, as they roll out, there's going to be a time that all of a sudden this gets expensive quickly. So.
Please introduce yourself for the record and answer the question.
Hi, I'm Sarah Floorman. I'm the Legislative Director for the Child Safety and Permanency Administration at DCYF. When this funding is appropriated to DCYF, it will go into our systems fund, where it will remain and be used as needed throughout the process. Part of our request to remove the date was because it creates confusion and it implies that that money might disappear when in fact, because it's already in our fund, it won't. We also want to ensure that folks are aware that because this is an iterative process, because we are moving with users and kind of constantly reassessing, we don't know how long this will take. We obviously want to get it done as quickly as possible, but we don't have a certain end date. We can't guarantee it will be done in time.
Representative Nelson.
So with that, I would make an oral amendment, if I could, that we would strike out the availability date so that it would just say it's a one-time appropriation. If that makes sense, Mr. Berg, or Ms. Sunderman.
Ms. Sunderman, please enlighten us on our butchery of amendments.
All right, Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would be, and this is amending the A1 amendment.
Yes.
Page 1, line 7, delete everything after appropriation and insert a period.
That sounds excellent. All right, so Representative Nelson moves an oral amendment to, on line 1.7 of the A1 amendment, delete everything after appropriation and insert a period. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we are on the underlying amendment to amended amendment. I think we'll just move to a vote on it. All those in favor of the A1 amendment as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted as amended. Now to the underlying bill, House File 1169.
Okay.
Any member discussion? Is there any member of the public who is here who would like to testify on House File 1169? Seeing none, Representative Nelson, why don't you close us out?
Okay. Thank you for hearing this, and I think it's a priority of all of us to get the funding done and getting the system updated. I do have a request for a technical amendment that came in rather late this morning, and it is in your packets, and it really gives a little bit more of a guidelines than what is in the underlying bill. And so I just wanted to discuss this a little bit. As Chair West said, we are planning to move this on to Ways and Means, and so I would be my intent that this amendment would be adopted there. I think Ms. Mock was rather busy this morning with a couple of other things, so I chose not to have her draft this amendment this morning, but it's really kind of clarifying the really what we're trying to do with the SSIS modernization. So if there's any questions to that, I would be happy to take them, or I think even the department would be willing to answer them as well.
All right. Representative Nelson renews his motion to re-refer House File 1169 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 1169 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
We won't go through it if you want to take 5 minutes. I can talk
okay.
So on.
Okay, we will now hear House File 1916. And the plan for this would be to be re-referred to the Committee of Judiciary. Representative West, would you like to move your bill?
I would love to move my bill. I'll move House File 1916 to be re-referred to Judiciary Committee. There are a couple amendments in here. We're going to hold off on discussion of those until Chair Katiza Batun returns. She's just outside for a minute. But I can introduce my bill if you'd like.
Yes, go ahead and introduce your bill, and then there are a couple amendments, but we will be waiting on hearing those amendments.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. You will note I brought treats to my own committee with the new High Chew Fantasy flavors. We've got Blue Hawaiian. They're interesting. Nothing beats the classic fruit flavors of High Chew, but I encourage the committee to partake. So House File 1916, it introduces essential safeguards to Minnesota's child care system. In recent years, as I'm fairly certain everyone here is well aware, the state has faced significant allegations of fraud in this area. Currently, there are 62 active investigations into providers currently by the Department of Human Services, and a recent KSTP news story raised some concerning issues with some child care centers that they visited, despite those child care centers receiving millions of taxpayer dollars. When they were visited in the middle of the day, where you'd expect children to be present, no children were present. Now, the Department of Human Services does oversight over these child care providers, and they said when they did their inspection, there indeed were children present. As, you know, if it wasn't, I really hope they'd do something about it. So I believe that, but clearly there's a discrepancy here where sometimes children aren't at certain locations when you'd expect them to be. It could be no big deal. Maybe it's all above board and just an after-school type situation. But considering the issues in the program raised by the Office of Legislative Auditor in their 2019 report, there's massive vulnerabilities in the CCAP program that can be addressed. So looking at something as simple as, are children present, this legislation offers a very straightforward solution to address those concerns. It mandates that child care centers receiving $1 million or more in child care assistance funds or early learning scholarships, as we will talk about once the bill is amended, must have cameras that monitor the entrances to classrooms and the entrance and exits to the facility that families use. Now, this is important. Particularly, half a CCAP is just making sure that the people on the attendance records are indeed the people who are showing up and receiving the state subsidy. And verifying that they're there is something that you can do in a once annual yearly visit, but that can be inadequate because it's only once a year. So with included in this monitoring proposal, it also allows the department to request that data. Now, this is another change that we will be talking about is rather than increasing the number of on-site inspections, thought it was most cost-effective to accomplish this goal to allow the department to request footage from these cameras for the department to verify that in an unannounced fashion, like a site visit, and they can certainly do more, they have within their authority to do more site visits, but not having to go down there to verify these things is just a lot more efficient way to do it. House File 1916 also has electronic attendance monitoring, which is something that both parties support. It's in the governor's proposal. Honestly, I find it astonishing that we don't have, you know, required electronic attendance reporting in law in 2025, but here we are. But this will help us on our way to that. That one of those issues was brought up by the legislative auditor was on this electronic attendance. This is a much more reliable way of tracking that people are who they say they are and where they are within the building. And lastly, it reinstates policy that the state used to undergo when it comes to providers submitting billing. Another issue brought up with the legislative auditor is how difficult it is to substantiate fraud. It is a very difficult thing to explore, hence our big issues we have in our state. And taking away the ability just to say everything's a clerical error, which there still are clerical errors, but having the penalty of perjury will increase accountability and give the fraudsters less out should they defraud the state taxpayers. You'll see in your packet there are several amendments. One was from me. Let's see here, really quick. I'd like to just really quick check with Annie Mock. The A2 amendment, is that relevant or is everything put in together in the other amendment?
Mr. Chair. members, the A2 amendment is not relevant. Everything that was in that is now in the A7.
Okay. Then we will move on to Chair Katisa-Watoon.
Chair Katisa-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair West. The A7, members, in your packets is a friendly amendment that the chair and I worked together on language this afternoon, and Ms. Mack was very helpful in putting this together on short notice. We both agreed to waive the amendment deadline for the A7, so it's, I guess it's kind of a combination author's amendment slash friendly amendment. And we, one, it includes my language from the A5, which will no longer be relevant as well, to include early learning scholarships as a part of the fraud monitoring and program integrity measures in the chair's bill prior to being amended. We also made changes to the section, so C in the lines 3.4, the effective date and below, some of these changes, we're basically making it permissive as opposed to requiring in-person inspections. The video monitoring may be done remotely, essentially. So the department can request video footage, they can review it remotely, and then should they have any red flags, they have the opportunity and the ability to do an in-person visit, but they are no longer required to do the in-person visits. Mr. Chair, you may want to speak to the other parts of the amendment, given they were of your original amendment.
All right, Chair West.
Thank you, Chair Katisa-Watun and Representative Nelson. So another aspect that I came across while exploring writing this bill was in regards to data retention of the video footage. In the underlying bill, it was 90 days. One thing this amendment does is change it to 30. The reason is looking at how much data would need to be stored. If you were to do that in a cloud service, which is what I'd recommend because it's much safer and readily available for anybody who needs it, to do 90 days worth of footage, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of dollars every month, and we don't want to create that large new cost for child care providers. So the 30 was the selected day because exploring the various options, what you see is if you pair your cloud system with the proper security software, you can have it hosted by basically the company of the same brand, and then the 30-day retention period is usually like $100 a year, or if you have in a particular many cameras, then it can be like maybe $300 a year. But that is far more affordable, and that also puts the option of the footage to be much higher resolution. This bill has a 720p minimum, which is basically the worst camera you could buy on the market right now. When you use these software cloud storage systems that sync with the cameras, you can have 4K footage stored for 30 days instead of 720p stored for 30 days. And that, when you're dealing with minute things, can be a benefit long term. What do we cover? Am I Chair Katisa-Watun? What else? Did I miss anything?
Chair Katisa-Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mock, is there anything that the chair and I are missing outlining for the committee?
Mr. Chair and member, there's just a few other things. Excuse me. There's some technical cleanup language throughout, just changing child care center to provider throughout. And then there is a change to the appropriation on page 13 to provide that the appropriation that's in the bill is for all of the activities that are required under the bill rather than just for the inspections and the electronic statewide attendance tracking system. And then there is also on starting on line 3.7 of the amendment, this provides that the inspections only take place if the provider is receiving more than $1 million a year in CCAP funding.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. Chair West, for the discussion.
Yes, that is a significant point, is The underlying bill had a $500,000 minimum for all these requirements. We've moved that up to $1 million in this amendment for CCAP and early learning scholarships. And also clarified, the underlying amendment was the underlying bill was somewhat vague on what the cameras are supposed to cover. Feedback I got from some providers where we'd like to know specifically what the requirements would be. So we clarified that to, you'll see on 3.16 of the amendment, covering public entrances and exits to the facility and where the legal guardian signs in and out for the child. And that helps really get at the fundamental piece when you're looking at CCAP fraud or early learning scholarships is, are the children who are supposed to receive these benefits showing up to care? And focusing on that aspect of the monitoring is the point of this bill. So as you can see, I appreciate Chair Katizwa-Toon working to help improve the bill, try to mitigate the amount of burden that it puts on providers, because none of us want to increase the cost of care. The hope here is that we can either have fraudsters cease operations without any intervention by the state, or we will root out fraudsters. Now, we don't know, maybe this applies to at least 73 providers, according to the numbers from last year's CCAP distribution. And I just looked at the early learning scholarships one, but only briefly, so I can't speak to that. But of those 73 top CCAP recipients, you're talking over $100 million in CCAP funds for only 73 providers. So there's a significant amount in a concentrated space, and just looking at a couple of these providers which were in the KSTP story, you had some providers who got over $2 million in a single year had 95 violations. We had also, there was another one, I think it was like 36 violations. And you see, pretty egregious when you consider the investment the state is giving them. And I would imagine that should merit a closer inspection by the department, which it does. The 96 violation did get put under conditional licensing. And I think this bill will help the department, not just in an anti-fraud measure, but it's always helpful to have this extra monitoring when you are looking at a facility that's receiving a lot of taxpayer funds. If we can root out, or at least, I mean, ideally we just scare off the fraud, because how do you operate when you're under this level of microscope? We can save significant money that can go to the people we actually want to help, not the fraudsters. We want an efficient use of tax dollars. That's kind of the theme of the year of this session. And this bill helps get us there. So I'm not sure. I will move the A7 amendment if it hasn't already been moved.
Okay. Thank you for moving this A7 amendment. Is do we have any further discussion? Okay. With that, we will all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Now I would, I don't know if there's any public testimony, but I would, or do we want to do?
Mr. Chair.
Chair West.
We've voided the amendment deadline to take up this amendment. I'd also like to bring up a Representative Coulter has an amendment, which he made the deadline, but then, you know, we changed literally everything. So we got a new amendment that fits on the bill, and we've also agreed to waive the deadline on that amendment.
Representative Coulter, if you would present your amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will move the A6 amendment, and I do, first of all, want to thank the Chair for waiving the deadline, given all the work that happened on this, particularly since I have a sneaking suspicion I know how he's going to vote on it, but really do appreciate this. And really, I think in a lot of ways, this sort of continues the theme. My wife always tells me that my expressions are kind of old-fashioned. But to me, this really feels like what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And this basically just more or less just deletes the other than the appropriation deletes all of the funding or the funding figures such that anybody who receives any funding, any CCAP or early learning scholarship funding would be subject to this bill. And I appreciate the, you know, the reasons that Chair West laid out for the choices that they made. But, you know, at the end of the day, somebody who would take in, for example, $999,999 in CCAP or early learning scholarships would not be subject to this bill. And so I'm doing it partly because I'm not a big fan of picking arbitrary numbers, but also because, you know, $750,000, $500,000 of CCAP is still a lot of money. And I think if we're serious about if this is the route that we're taking to be serious about addressing some of those issues, then we really should just treat everybody equally and say that anybody who is taking any kind of public subsidy should be subject to these same enforcement mechanisms. So that is the nut and bolts of the bill, or the amendment, excuse me.
Chair West, do you have a response? Or?
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Thank you, Representative Coulter. Well, this might shock you, but this committee is beautifully bipartisan, but this is not. So, like, the reason that we, 100 million or 1 million isn't an entirely arbitrary number. It was trying to set a number that captures as much as possible without creating too much of a burden. 73 providers with, I think, the Early Learning Scholarship expansion might add a few. It is a manageable number. So you think they have to ask for footage twice over the period of a year for 73. So that's, you know, 146. Very reasonable amount of requests that the department, I'm sure they will ask for more FTEs, which in this case, I think it could use one or two more FTEs. If you expanded it to the thousands of providers around the state or however many get CCAP fund, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but you're talking about a tremendous regulatory burden. And I don't always have great sympathy for departments of state government, but in this case, I think that would be an unreasonable ask. So with that in mind, I would urge my colleagues to vote down this amendment, or Representative Coulter also could withdraw it too, if he would be so kind.
Follow up, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that concern. I do, and as somebody who likewise is concerned about what we ask and sometimes don't ask, just tell providers to do, I think that's certainly a reasonable position to take. But you know, again, I would just say, you know, $750,000 of CCAP is still a lot of money. And so I, with all due respect to the chair, I'm not going to withdraw the amendment, and I would request a roll call.
Okay. All right. There is a roll call. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I kind of want to bring a conversation from another part of our state government with regards to local government aid, because this is very similar in my mind. What we're doing is we're providing what is CCAP, right? What is the purpose of it? It's to provide help for child care facilities, right? That's what it's for. So getting kids into these facilities, that's the purpose. And you have all these other things, right? So the chair's talking about the potential burden, right? Well, when we're talking about local government aid, there are some cities in this state that get a very minimal amount of aid. So I have one near my district that gets about $30,000 a year. But in order to unlock that $30,000, they have to pay an auditor about $12,000 to $15,000 to get that. So you have a $30,000 from the state, but they have to pay $15,000 of that to another community just to get the other $15,000. Now, what is the purpose of local government aid? Is it to pay an auditor, or is it to provide the local government with aid? The same for the CCAP. So we can't bring down the threshold to the point where, you know, here's this one child care facility is receiving $10,000 worth of CCAP funding, but in order to unlock that, they have to have $5,000 worth of cameras and cloud subscriptions. That doesn't serve the purpose. The purpose is to ensure that the money is going to the right place, to the right people, for the right thing. And this is one of those instances where we can catch the low-hanging fruit and ensure that our state dollars are put to good purpose without just paying subscription costs to Google for their security network or some purpose like that, because it then defeats the purpose. So I think it's a really good fine line there, and I appreciate the conversation, because I think that number, there is wiggle room. I definitely don't think it should go to everyone, because then we're going to see a serious problem like what the state auditor and I are doing with the state audit task force that we're working on right now. We're trying to find that line between cities' populations, local government aids that they're getting, and where is that line, because it is becoming more and more difficult to fulfill the obligations of the state while still using state dollars to a good purpose. So I understand the intention of this, and it does have merits, but I think that the way that we're currently going at it with this amendment is in the wrong direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Is any further discussion? Chair West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the primary reason we're looking at the highest dollar amounts, I already said, is because that's where the money is, and we should be good stewards of tax dollars. But if you eliminate the bottom, which I think we can have a legitimate, reasonable conversation on the dollar amount, but if you eliminate the bottom and go all the way down for everyone, you do create a disincentive of people to be in the program. Some of these providers get over $1 million, some over $2 million, many over $1.5 million. This, and I would say the vast majority of them, if not all of them, also have cameras in their facility already, so compliance with this requirement is minimal. But if you extend it to everyone, you're increasing compliance costs, you're discouraging them from using public assistance to take care of children in their community. So for those reasons, I think it would be a tremendous disservice to providers, tremendous disservice to families to take this amendment. So I would say everybody here should vote no, and they should feel very good about doing so.
Well, thank you, Chair West. Any further discussion? Okay, there is a roll call have been being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair West.
No.
Vice Chair Nelson.
No.
Lead Katiza Watun.
Aye.
Representative Altendorf. No. Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Aye.
Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative McDonald.
No.
Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Perez Vega.
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar.
There being seven nays and six ayes, the motion fails. The amendment is not adopted. And I think at this point I'm going to ask Ms. Sunderman, or maybe Ms. Mock, do we have any other amendments? Because there was a little bit of confusion here, but I think that's all the amendments.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's all the amendments that are relevant today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. I think next let's go to discussion on the bill as amended, or was it?
Yeah.
Okay, is there any, or first maybe I'll ask if there's any public testimony. Okay, seeing none. Let's go to discussion, and Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and forgive me if I just missed this when the A7 was being explained, but I'm, the sake of ease, I'm looking at lines 1.9 through 1.11 on the A7 amendment. This is the definition of video monitoring. And I'm just, could you explain that a little bit more? I'm not sure who this question is directed at. I guess my question is where would the cameras be and what would they record?
Okay. Thank you, Representative Coulter. And I believe Representative Katiza Watun would like to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Coulter, for the question. Chair West, if I am not mistaken, this is something that might have been in my original A5 amendment that might have gotten overlooked when we changed to the entrances and exits portion. Ms. Mock, potentially further clarification.
Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in on lines 1.9 through 1.11 is a general definition of what video monitoring means, and that's the same in this early learning scholarships part as it is in the part that applies to CCAP. But then if you go to page, let's see here. It's lines 2.8 through 2.11. It actually specifies where the video cameras and other devices have to be installed, and that's where it provides that it has to cover public entrances and exits to the facility and exits and entrances and exits to areas where a parent or legal guardian signs in or out the parent's or guardian's own child. And that language is also in the CCAP portion as well.
Representative Kazhij-Watun.
Thank you, Ms. Mock, for that point of clarification.
Representative Colder.
Thank you. That was helpful. I just wasn't quite tracking where everything went with amendment, so I wanted to understand that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair West, for this bill. I unfortunately have to ask a kind of hard question. Just last month, there was an arrest of a man right here in Minnesota who used video monitoring software just like this to create child sexual videos of kids that at a school. And it was not videos that were in bathrooms, it was in public and shared areas. And what we find globally is that this is a rising concern. For example, a July 2024 report found that there were 3,500 new AI-generated images like this since October of the previous year. And in the previous year, when they did that investigation in October, there had been over 20,000 AI images posted in just 1 month. And so my question is, you're a really smart guy, and I would assume you thought of this, but can you just give me some reassurances and some, feel-good words at least, to help me understand how this bill will protect against that and how we can make sure that this doesn't continue happening, because unfortunately it is on the rise right now. Thank you.
Chair West.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and thank you for the question, Representative Hansen. I did think about this, actually. The one qualifier I would give before I answer is, unfortunately, sickos can also sit outside in the parking lot and film them, and if they're not on private property, they can do so with impunity and do all these heinous things. So unfortunately, we're working on getting rid of dealing with those individuals, but we can't exterminate evilness in the human heart. But back to more direct answer to your question. So if you look at the A7 amendment, because this is the same language that is in the underlying bill as well, in 2.14 to 2.17. So I, to 2.14 to 2.17, if I said that too quickly. It was a decision between, do you want to offer mandate live video monitoring, or have the department request footage? And to address that specific concern, this is request of the commissioner. So it's not, it can be a CCTV system completely closed. It doesn't have to be a Wi-Fi system, which would be vulnerable to some hacker hacking in and monitoring the children in some capacity for nefarious purposes. The commissioner has to request the data, and that data would be transmitted, you know, electronically via email. Maybe they could hack into their emails as well and pull that information, but that is a degree more difficult than hacking into somebody's Wi-Fi. And I can say that with some authority, as I used to be a Geek Squad agent back in my day.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that answer, Chair West. I just wanted to make sure that we all were aware that this is happening. So as we ever expand surveillance of our children in any way, shape, or form, this should be something at the tops of our minds, because it is a global trend that is growing. And so I wanted to make sure we raised awareness to that. And again, because we had a very recent arrest right here in Minnesota, that was very alarming. Might you consider at some point, whether it's now, later, but before it becomes law, if it gets there, to include some of your Geek Squad knowledge for security and some safety, perhaps in an enhanced criminal charge, should anybody access this information and be found to have used it in that way?
Chair West.
I'd like to orally amend an enhanced criminal charge. absolutely. I prefer to do business in a serious way that actually has a chance of becoming law, which is why I worked together with Jerica Tizabatun, and she was gracious enough to actually work with me. One thing we suffer from in this building is overwhelming cynicism and assuming nobody's acting in good faith. And that has been a fear of mine every single day I chair this committee and try and be as bipartisan as humanly possible. And I will say your side of the aisle has, until Representative Coulter roll called this amendment. I have been so pleased with how the committee has run, and we're operating in good faith. So, yes, I will continue to reflect the good faith offered by your side of the aisle and as this bill moves forward through the process. And that's a perfect discussion for the Judiciary Committee as well, where it is headed to.
Okay. Thank you. Follow-up?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that. I think that's really great. We have an opportunity to really lead the nation in what legislation around this could and should look like to make sure we're protecting our kids from this stuff. And I know you're the guy for the job, so I look forward to seeing that language. But also, we've got a long history of working together and being bipartisan, so I look forward to continuing that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And if I might take a little bit of indulgence as a chair and add that, you know, it's so frustrating to see when we have things that are intended for good, there's always going to be people that use it for evil. And I think when you brought up the point of enhanced criminal penalties, I think that is something that we definitely need to look at as a state, that when people are abusing our systems, and especially worse when it's abusing and making amusement out of our children and exploiting them is something I think everybody can get behind having an enhanced penalty on that. And I thank you for bringing the awareness of that. Further discussion. Seeing none, Chair West, would you like to wrap up your discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like we had a pretty thorough discussion. This has been something that I think we can work on together moving forward, and it's been properly scoped. I think we could expand it if Representative Coulter, if that can get additional support and help move it through the process. There is some expansion I think is totally reasonable. As it moves forward, we'll definitely work with the department to see exactly how burdensome expansion will be, but we did tailor this to be very targeted and worked in a bipartisan manner to move it forward. So I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 1916 as amended to the Committee on Judiciary.
Okay, the bill has been, let's see. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is re-referred to Judiciary, and I think that is all. Chair West.
Tomorrow is food day, so, I mean, it wouldn't hurt if you have a bill up to bring food, just saying. you'll get to see me again on another bill, which, I mean, I feel like I've had tremendous discretion. All these chairs hear their own bills, but didn't happen until today. But with that, we'll go to food day, and then next week we will see Chair Tizabatun chair her first meeting as well.
Okay. Right. Representative West. Hanson,
what an honor.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And to our chairs, I just want to say thank you for a great committee. I really appreciate this. You know, next week things are going to change up a little bit. But I would humbly ask that we get some of our bills heard at some point in time. I've dropped a number of them that are bipartisan, and I would appreciate hearing back about when I could expect to hear those. I think a number of folks on our committee are also waiting to hear back, and so I would love for our bipartisanship to extend to getting some of our bills up in that seat as well. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, fair comment. There was a little cross wires on getting hearing requests to where I did not see many of them. That has been rectified for about a week. But I'm happy to hear I think I've heard about as many Democrat bills as I have heard Republican bills, but not one of yours. So I guess that is pretty rude. So we can resolve that.
All right. If there's nothing else, that concludes our agenda for today, and the meeting is adjourned.